You're listening to the Gold Squadron Podcast, your home for X-Wing discussion, strategy, and entertainment.
This is episode 30 of the Gold Squadron Podcast. I'm your host, Dion Morales, and I am joined by Gold Leader Ron Longhi.
Thanks for having me again.
Our targeting coordinator, Andrea Longhi.
Hey, guys.
Lil Emway, Marcel Manzano.
I am one with the Schwartz, but it's a Schwartz one with me.
Anyway.
Say that three times fast.
I run out of breath.
There you go. How's everybody doing today? Everybody feeling good?
Good, yeah.
Yeah, I feel great, man.
All right, we're on episode 30. That means we've been doing this for 60 weeks.
Dang.
Yeah, it's a long time. We're going to go over the store champs we've been to since the last time we recorded. We'll talk about my little trip to Ohio. And then we'll kind of take some guesses at what we expect to see with Wave 11 coming out in a couple days. And when this releases, it'll have been 1 weekend of store championships.
Unlock the hologram.
All right, guys. So a couple weeks ago, we went to all four of us were at the TPK Games Store Championship. And we're going to start with you, Ron. What did you fly? And you got any in-game highlights?
Yeah, I flew Lone Wolf Vader. So it was Vader with Lone Wolf, homing missile, Tidal, advanced targeting computer, engine upgrade. And then I flew him with quick draw that had fire control system, lightweight frame, and crack shot. Yep. And then I flew him with the TIE Striker. I did countdown with crack shot and ailerons. Oh, and quick draw and countdown both also had lightweight frame. And that list came in at 98 points.
Sweet. So tell us.
Actually, 97.
Yeah, it was 97, yeah.
97 points. So I was going to, for a little bit of initiative bid against, I was expecting some Fenrau. So I hadn't tested the list too much. I think I only played it twice prior to going to the tournament, but I've been just wanting to fly something different, wanting to fly Imperials. It's been a long time since I flew them. We're talking since before Palpatine was released, so it's been that long.
That's a long time.
Yeah, since I like flew them at all competitively. I flew Scum since basically the Slaver came out. I flew Scum because that was my favorite ship, and that's kind of where the Gold Squadron Special came through. But I wanted to fly him. I played one game against Brandon at the store, and I did really well against him. And then I played one game at my house against Leander, and I did really well against him. And then I showed up. I got a bye in the first round.
Boo.
Which sucked. I always like to come to play, so never want to buy. I would rather play and lose.
Well, you know, a TPK game, they did a good event, but I will say that they did say we're capping it at 24, and they took a 25th person. So
that's okay. Yeah. No, here's the thing. You know what? A lot of stores will often do that just to make sure that, like, as many people as can play as possible. And, like, they maybe can only seat 24, and they'll take 25 just to make sure some other player plays, and then the downside is that someone gets a buy. I'm not going to lie. At our regional, I did the same thing. Like, we had 120 people that had prepaid for the event. We had 96 people on the wait list. And there was two guys that drove here all the way from Peoria that were just hoping they would get in. And if they didn't get in, they were going to come on Sunday and play in the side event. And they both showed up, and they made 121. So I took them both and gave a random person a buy.
True. So I guess my
there's
issue,
good and bad.
My issue was with it though is that it should have done a fifth round of Swiss the way the math worked out.
No, they should have. They definitely should have, but being a casual event, they can make that call. But they should have, because making the top cut was brutal. I don't know how many X1s there were, but I think, like, I took 8th place, and I was an X1. So, and my only loss was to Marcel, who I played in the second round. And Marcel flew a version of Double Jump Masters. Well, he can tell you exactly what he flew.
Okay. So
we'll get to him. We'll get to him later. Let you finish up your stuff.
Well, basically, he flew Double Jump Masters and a Slaver. And we had a pretty tight asteroid field. Marcel had a really nice stalling-ish tactic. He didn't like Fortress, but he had a really great setup where he kind of, like, you know, did a sloop maneuver and was able to block his Slaver for a few turns and then come out of this maneuver where he's basically flying in formation in between the rocks. So it was really good. I kind of approached and tried to do a little bait with Vader action. He didn't really fall for the bait, although I did feel like I got the engagement I wanted when we first fired. But the engagement didn't go well for me. He had to split his attacks. So, like, one jump master had to fire at Vader and couldn't fire the torps because Vader was out of arc. The other jump master had to fire at quick draw, but he had no modifiers because Vader shot his missile at that jump master and stripped his focus because he had to use the focus to evade the damage from Vader's homing missile. And then the Slaver couldn't attack quick draw or Vader. It had to attack the Striker obstructed. So it really wasn't. I think it was actually a good setup for me, but Marcel just blasted quick draw, 4 damage, a crit, 3 hits, and I'm not gonna lie, it kind of put me on tilt because it was all natural, no modifications. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of fell apart from there, and that was pretty much that game. The next 2 games I played a guy with he had a Ventress with Lots Razi and Dengar. And I destroyed him. I killed Dengar.
That's always good.
Quick draw. I mean, just, I don't know who he was. I think his name was Matt. Super nice guy. But we did a lot of dancing for positioning, and I ended up on top. I ended up making a move with quick draw and getting quick draw at range 1 with the target lock already at Dengar, but Dengar wasn't in arc, and so I did the triple attack with quick draw because of his ability and being in the rear arc twice.
Oh baby,
at range 1, so I got the Holy Trinity triple attack. I was able to spend the crack shot in that turn 2, so I stuck 3 crits on Dengar in the single turn and just obliterated him. And then it ended up being Ventress versus my entire team, and he constantly had to choose between where to put his firing arc because I was attacking Ventress on 3 sides because my ships were all spread out. Beautiful. So
that's how you take out a Lancer.
Yeah, yeah. It was like I was attacking 3 different arcs, and he had to choose where to move it, and he ended up just not moving and just pushing and evading each turn. So it made it easy to avoid, like, the tractor beam and the range 2 stressing and all that stuff. And then my last match was against another Scum player. So I played against Scum all 3 rounds. And that player was running Bossk and Ketsu. And it was a heavy ordnance combo type list. But he was relatively new to X-Wing, and he had said that beforehand. And the only reason I played him is because his opponent, which was my previous opponent, dropped and didn't tell the TO and just left. So he didn't have someone to play, and I didn't have someone to play. So we just played each other, and he got paired up against me. And I just outflew him. I had position the whole time. I tabled him. I destroyed all his ships. I didn't lose anything. The only ship I lost all day was Quick Draw. I lost it against Marcel, and that was it. And then I had a bye.
And then didn't make the cut.
And I didn't make the cut. I was in, I think, 8th. So the bye only gives you 150 MOV. And I only tabled 2 guys. And then I lost Quick Draw in that one game. So you really had to have really high MOV to make it. And everyone was really tight.
You actually lost all 3 in that.
Oh, yeah. Against you, I lost everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I conceded. So, yeah. No, against you, I lost everything. Sorry, I misspoke. I lost Quick Draw in the Dengar game.
That's still not too bad, though. And considering, yeah, the 150 out of the bye, I felt that pain at the system open.
Yeah, I mean, this is like I said, I lost Quick Draw in the Dengar game. I did get tabled against Marcel, and then I did fine in the other two, but I didn't care about losing Quick Draw in game 2 because of, I mean, trading Quick Draw for Dengar. I'll do that any day of the week.
That's a good trade.
I mean, really, he had to use Ventress to finish off Quick Draw, but it didn't matter. So, yep, that was my tournament. It was fun. The people that run TPK Games are super nice. It was really fun to see so many of our guys there, but on the downside, we kind of beat up on each other. A lot of us played each other.
Yeah,
so it's kind of weird when you travel and then everyone plays against each other. But, yeah, I mean, this was the first real competitive game I played since November. So it was just fun. I had a lot of fun.
Andrea, what did you run?
I ran Nora with the Tidal, PTL, Engine, R2, and Ray. And then I ran Dash, old school Dash, with HLC, Bush, Engine, the Outrider Tidal, and Kanan. So I had never flown that list before. Had to actually, like, read the cards, and wonderful Dion told me after my first game I wasn't ever using Nora's ability in that entire game. So scrub points for Andrea, who didn't even read her cards. Yeah, I was in the same camp as Ron. I hadn't played a competitive game since Worlds November, so it'd been a little while. Figured I'd just give something a try and see what happened. I don't even remember what my record was. I think I only had like 1 win. I had 2 actually.
You went 2-2.
Everybody was pretty cool. Got to meet some more fans, which is always fun. And yeah, a 500 record seems good enough considering I haven't played competitively in 6 months.
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, one interesting thing is all my games were against patrons of the show. So that was really cool. Cool and a little nerve-wracking all at the same time. It's like, wait, do I try to wreck them or do I be nice because they support the show, right? Yeah. So now I gave it my all in all the games. I flew, which you've heard that I've been flying for a while, but for anybody who's not familiar, I've been doing an old Fenaru variant. So you got Manaru with Rig Cargo Chute, Atani Mind Link, R4 Agromech, Ion Projector, and Intelligence Agent, for those of you who don't know the slang. Then you got Fenrau, also with Atani Mind Link, Concordon Protector and Auto Thrusters, and Old Tarak with Atani Mind Link, Concordon Protector, and Auto Thrusters. Round 1 was against Alex Dorf, flying Kanan Biggs with M9G8. And one funny thing, I just had a total mental slip. Before, John Babcock was there, and he was also flying a Kanan Biggs variant. He might have been the guy you played. He had R4D6 on his, and I was talking to him up until the very start round. We start playing. I start playing Alex, and in my head, I'm saying, "Oh, he has R4 D6." And usually, my strategy against R4 D6 bigs is to stay back with my ships and just plink away damage, but stay out of range of the TLTs. So I can just, because me going in hard with Fen Rao doesn't matter because he's just going to cancel it down to three hits any or to two hits anyway. So I just keep far away. So I did that strategy. And then about three rounds in, I realized, oh, crap, it's M9G8. So my positioning was bad with that matchup, and I wasn't happy about that. But basically, one really just kind of crazy thing happened at the end. It came down to just Kanan. The shuttle was dead. Biggs is dead. Kanan versus Fen. My Fen had two hull left. His Kanan had four hull left. I was able to dodge his arc and stay in range one for three turns in a row. And the way the positioning of the board was, I knew I had three turns to kill him. He had four hull left. And on 15 red dice, because I did have to use my action every time to reposition, on 15 red dice, I got zero hits.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So
that sounds like Andrew dice rolling.
Yeah, but I shouldn't have even been in that position to begin with because I screwed up in the beginning. But you know, Alex was able to take advantage of that. He got the W there. Then I played against Francois Moray, and he was flying, I think, probably, in my opinion, was one of the coolest lists that I saw at the store championship. Francois only got one win in this one. He also played at Grognard Games. We talked about that in the Laps episode. But super cool. We got Fen Rao with Push the Limit, the title, and auto thrusters. Then he has a Zealous Recruit. That's a PS1 Protectorate with the Conquer Dawn title. And then Sunny Bounder. That's one of your new sick pilots with Mangler Cannon and the Heavy Sick title. And then Quinn Jost with Deadeye, Proton Torpedoes, and Heavy Sick title. And it basically came down to this one engagement probably about halfway through the game where I had opportunity to basically, with Manaru, have a permanent block on Fen Rao with the positioning, and I missed that block by a hair. Like, I did the barrel roll, and I was like, all right, I'm going to pull it back because I got to make sure that my next move doesn't go off the board. But if I would have just pushed it forward just a little bit, he would have hit me on the straight that he took. And then I would have been able to pummel him with my other two ships, but that didn't happen. I missed it, and his six came in and just wrecked Manaru, and then we went to time, and he won on points because I think Manaru was dead, and Ulterak lived. But anyway, Manaru was dead, and he hadn't lost any ships, so I lost that one. And then I won the last two. I played against Ben Chaco, newer player. He was running Omega Leader with Juke, Comm Relay, Stealth Device, the Inquisitor, kind of standard build with Push to Limit, the title, and Auto Thrusters, and Quick Draw with Expertise, the title, Pattern Analyzer, Fire Control System, and Lightweight Frame. I did win 100-0. He was, like I said, great guy, newer player. He had a really good opening approach, but he couldn't recover in the tight asteroid field that we had after I blocked him. So that's really what killed him, and probably the thing that swung the game the hardest was I was able to block Manaru. Excuse me, I was able to block with Manaru, quick draw onto a rock, and I killed him. And he was never able to shoot or shoot me back with his ability. So that was pretty brutal. And then I played Sean, and he was running a Poe and Han Solo list. And we spent, honestly, 45 minutes doing a big circle around the board, trying to get positioning. And then finally we turned into each other when I was about three quarters of the way through. And I was able to just, with Manaru, just control his Han Solo was able to win that game. It was all my ships with full health. Manaru maybe had a couple shields gone versus Poe. And Han was dead, so he just conceded there. But a lot of fun to play. Great guy. Awesome. Everybody who I played, lots of fun. Marcel.
I'm awake. What? Oh. Me. Okay. As Ron said, actually, this was actually the first time that all four of us played in the same, even small tournament. And Damn, since Worlds. So yeah, that was nice that all of us were in the same place. Usually we're even at League Night, while we're playing, Ron is usually helping out the new players and not really playing with us, and so it was just really cool to have everybody there. So I flew a contracted scout, two contracted scouts loaded the same way, with cargo chutes, trick shot, unhinged astromech, one plasma and a K4, and then a slaver party bus with the old school Dengar Zuckus, and then I gave inspiring recruit in case I wanted to do the two rerolls instead of one. So, excuse me. Yeah, this was actually the most fun I had in a long time playing X-Wing. Very long time. I found, and I mentioned this to Ron, I found the most fun I was having was actually just maneuvering. You know, not even rolling dice. I was just really having a ton of fun just moving with the ships and, like, creating new formations and breaking out of formations and just making the ships be and do whatever I wanted them to. And I felt like I was in complete control of the formation. No matter what I did, they always ended up exactly where I wanted them. So that was just a ton of fun. It's been a while since it felt so natural.
We were dancing all over that board for a long time.
Yeah, it was a blast. And that kind of kept up for all four matches. I just really felt like I flew my butt off that day. I can't think of a single move that I did that I would not have done again. It was just a really good day for me. And I ended up going 3-1. I missed the top four by 7 MOB. So that was kind of tough. Just, you know, feeling I did so well and still missing, you know, the cut by less than a TIE fighter. But it happens. So the first match, I played Francois. 5
rounds. Never forget.
did you say something? Yeah.
Sorry, I said it should have been 5 rounds. Never forget.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was fun. I felt good. Even then, it was just so much fun. And the first round, I played Francois. And, I think with Francois, I got nothing to say. I mean, he just, same thing as with Ron. I just, you know, we both flew well. I just got the better dice. And we both got the engagement that we wanted. With Francois specifically, I killed both of his Sikhs with one shot each. I one-shotted them both, and that's not good for him when he's only got 4 ships, and they're all, you know, squishy. So Francois was the first match, and I won that one pretty handily. Same thing with the second match with Ron. Ron flew it well. It's just the dice were on my side, and that's why I'm Imwe, and the Force was with me. Then the third match, I flew Andrew Burgani. So I think everybody here knows Andrew. He was the second place at the Milwaukee Regional, and he's a pretty popular player here in Chicago. He's also one of the main admins for the Reddit group for X-Wing TMG. So, very cool guy, and even with him, he was flying. He did end up making the top four with going undefeated. He was flying Quick Draw, Omega Leader, and Vestry with I think it was Ion, or no, I don't know. It was a TIE D Vestry. I forgot what the actual canon was. And with him, I did the same type of dancing around of just not necessarily fortressing, but stalling, where I'm moving up maybe about an inch at a time. But everybody's moving. Nobody's actually stopped. And I got the engagement exactly the way I wanted. I got Omega Leader at range 2 with 2 target locks and focuses on him, plus a slaver at range 2. With a Focus and a Dengar and a Zuckus. And after rolling both torpedoes fully modded, and after rolling four hits with the slaver, I did a total of 2 damage, 1 shield and 1 hull. So I got the exact engagement that I wanted. I shot all my ordnance and did everything exactly that I wanted. It just didn't work out. So I think it was just karma. You know, the dice that were with me in the first 2 rounds just decided to go away. And I was only able to kill Omega Leader in that match, so I didn't get very good MOV, and that's ultimately what cost me. And in the 4th match, I played somebody who's relatively new. I forgot exactly what he was flying, but he's a relatively new guy, and I was able to table him as well. So that's why my MOV was good, just not good enough. It was just a blast. I really had a good time. It was the first time that I flew two slaver. I mean, that I flew the slaver since Gen Con of last year. This is the very first time since last year, Gen Con, that I actually took the YV out and figured out that I still like it. And Dengar and Zuck can still put out some damage, and that 180 arc is good. So I did say I'm not going to fly the same list twice during the whole store championship season, and I'm not. But I didn't say I wasn't going to fly the same ship twice, so... yeah, I think the slaver needs another shot, but just with a different supporting cast.
I like that. I like that for sure. So, speaking of flying different lists, guys, I flew a different list at a store championship.
Don't lie.
But it had 3 jump masters in it.
All right. I knew there was a catch.
There always is. I went with my family to Ohio, because that's where my wife is from, for the 4th of July, and it was perfectly lined up where the same weekend of 4th of July, there was a store championship in Columbus, and the store was called Ravenstone Games, and David Carver was the TO, and he is one of the leaders of the Raven Squadron. Great group of guys out of Columbus. They just won the Outrider Cup, the summer edition, a few weeks ago. A lot of really good players there. And I was lucky enough to get into the top 4 at this tournament, but not past that. I still haven't broke through that ceiling of top 4. Just can't push through. Anyway.
One day.
Maybe it's the ship. Maybe you need to fly a different ship.
Leave me alone. I will fly it until they burn it to the ground, okay?
Isn't that coming?
Who knows? One really interesting thing with the list at the store championship, there was not a single list with bigs in it out of almost 32 players. Not wow. A single list with bigs. Yep.
That's really surprising.
Yep. That's really surprising. If you read the boards, you would think he was broken.
The winner was Jeff Osler. He had asymmetrical robots. Interesting that this weekend that just passed, 3 different store championships were run by the Wave 6 robots. So you had IG-88C with Crackshot, Heavy Laser Cannon, the Arc Caster, the IG-2000 Tidal, Fire Control System, Glitter Stem, and Auto Thrusters. Now, if you're not familiar with the Arc Caster, that is the 4 dice cannon at range 1 that requires you that if you hit, you have to damage another ship at range 1. So that's pretty interesting, and that was on IGC. And then on IG-88B, he had Crackshot, Mangler Cannon, IG-2000, Fire Control, Glitter Stem, and Auto Thrusters. So really interesting list. He did have 1 loss in Swiss, but he obviously played well enough to get the title. Yeah. So my games, I took really good notes on all of them, or most of them, but I'm not gonna go through all of them, all the detailed notes. But was game three, guys. I got us some podcast notoriety here. I played Mikhail Jenkins. He's one of the hosts of the Stay on Target podcast.
Okay.
And I whooped him.
Nice. Some street cred on the podcast scene.
That's right. I love Mikhail. That's right. He's a good guy. He was flying Dengar, Fen, and Aldra. It's a really popular list that's going around right now. He had Dengar with all these ships have Atani. Dengar had Plasma Torpedo, Extra Munitions, Boba Fett, R4 Agrimech, Guidance Chips, and Punishing One. And then Fen Rao, Mind Link, Tidal Auto Thrusters, and Inaldra with just Mind Link and the Light Sick Interceptor. So a couple of things that happened in this game that really swung it hard my way. In the beginning, I didn't overcommit to Dengar or Fen. I'm of the belief that in this list, if you kill Dengar first, you win the game. But I didn't overcommit because I needed to see what he was going to do. And I saw him set up for the 5-forward range 1 Fen Rao thing. Like, I saw it coming, so I made sure all my ships had Fen Rao in the arc. Like, I didn't have the target lock, but I had enough shots where, you know, he got his 5 dice off. He spent the this is the mistake. He spent the focus on his attack. He did 4 shields and a hull on one of my jump masters, and then my jump masters ate him. He was dead. He wasn't able to modify his dice. He got his title a couple times, but that was it. And then after that, I was able to fully engage Dengar. I perma-blocked him, never let him have actions after that, besides his Atani focus from Inaldra, and was able to get rid of Dengar and get rid of Inaldra. Round 5, played against David Lebel, or Lebel. And guys, this was recorded by Raven Squadron. It'll be on YouTube here in probably in a few weeks. Shout out to Dave again for running the event, David Carver. And David Lebel was a great sport. So I screwed up. And I jokingly / not jokingly said, hey, can we edit that out because that was really stupid? And he goes, no. So what did I do? So I was setting my dials, and my opening was going to be 4 forward with I set up my jump masters. You probably have seen Marcel set it up, where you have 2 of them facing forward, and the one of them that potentially, if it wants to, can bump into the side or just turn behind them. So I was setting my dials, and I set the 4 forward, and I set the 4 forward, and I put them down, and when I was double-checking, I grabbed the wrong dial, and it said too hard, and I was like, oh no, that one's supposed to be a 4 forward. So then I put down the dials, and all the dials said 4 forward. I didn't triple check them, so I did my 4 forward, moved ahead, the next one moved ahead, flipped the one that's supposed to go 2, and it said 4 forward on the dial. I even said out loud, all right, too hard to the right, and looked down at the dial and used expletives to express my upsetness, and I was like, oh well, I'm off the board. And he basically says, no, man, I don't want to win that way. And I was like, are you sure? He's like, I don't want to win with it. And I asked him again, like, are you sure? And he goes, yeah. I'm like, oh, my God, thank you again. I gave him some swag. I was like, dude, you're awesome. But I was able to win the game. And then the top 4 game, the sad one. So we had built an asteroid field that took up most of my side of the board. And to water it down, because I know I'm going a little long here, is... He had quick draw with adaptability, targeting synchronizer, fire control system, lightweight frame, Colonel Vessery with Ty D, veteran instincts, and tractor beam, and the twin ion engine, and Pierre Sabak with veteran instincts, adaptive ailerons, and lightweight frame. Basically, I decided, all right, I'm going to offer him 2 jump masters, see which ones he shoots. And then block with the one that he shoots because I should have some life left. And I did, but then what ended up happening is I blocked him in a way where, because he had all PS8s, he could react to my blocks, and he just got his ships in the way of each other. That way he still had range 1 shots on the one that was hurt. It was a pain. I really wish this one had been recorded because I think it was a really good game. I was able to slow play him, in the not slow play him, but just kind of go slowly with my guys, do some self bumping to make him commit to this really nice lane. And if I got him in that lane, the idea was I could block him with the rocks and my Jumpmaster maneuverability and kind of create this death trap, just like a kind of a Ferris wheel of blocks, like get a guy in, sloop behind, get a torpedo and bring him around the other side and just kind of keep doing that with the area that I saw there. But it didn't work out.
Do you live in the Chicagoland area or plan on visiting? Come on down to Pastimes Comics and Games, the home of Gold Squadron, where we play X-Wing every Wednesday and have tournaments the first Sunday of every month. We also play Imperial Assault, Armada, LCG, and Destiny on different days. Visit our Facebook page, Pastimes Star Wars, for more information.
All right, so the plan for this segment here is just to go over everything that we've seen. That's not everything, but some of the pertinent things that are coming out here with Wave 11, and just kind of make some predictions of what we think we're going to see here in our first weekend of store championships. When everybody listens to this, that weekend would have happened already, so it'll be interesting to see if we're right or wrong. Some of these things have not been officially released because but pictures of them have popped up on the internet from people opening the packs early because Ron, like you said, Amazon doesn't respect street dates. So we're just going to kind of go down the list that I made here. First, let's talk about upgrades. What's the first upgrade you see there, Andrea?
It is R4E1. It is a salvaged astromech for 1 point. It reads, you can perform actions on your bomb and torpedo upgrade cards even if you are stressed. After you perform an action in this way, you may discard this card to remove one stress token from your ship.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
What do you think, Ron? You're kind of our resident bomber. What do you think can work well with this?
So this is a salvage astromech, so
scum only.
Scum only. Ugh.
Or is it? It's not scum only.
It's what? Oh, the new Scourge bomber can take this?
Yeah, the Scourge bomber can take it on with the title on.
Okay.
On the rebel side.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's some. It basically makes it harder for you to stop someone from dropping a cluster mine or a prox mine. I couldn't tell you how good it is until you fly it, because bombs are kind of weird. Like, until you're flying them around, unless you have.
Oh, don't hedge your bet, Ron. Come on. Give us something.
Advanced slam. Unless you have advanced slam, it's really hard to say. To be honest with you, like, I flew a lot of bombers without advanced slam, and it took me a while to find the bombs that I liked. And I didn't really love action bombs until advanced slam. So, I think this is great for 1 point.
I don't think we're gonna see it this weekend coming up. But just like Sabine took. Sable some time to actually, you know, put a bunch of K-Wings with Sabine on there, and people will be like, what? I think this is this, not just this, scum bombing, I think, is just going to take somebody a couple months to really put something together that is just going to blow people's minds, because we have a release that is basically making, it's adding a bomb slot to anything that has a crew with Cad Bane. It's adding two different ships that have inherent bombing capabilities with, you know, you can drop the bomb with a turn or something like that. Then you add Eamon. Then you add bomblets, which are unlimited bombs every time. We're talking about unlimited bombs at every single turn. So there will be a bomb every time, and then we're just so many different things that are coming up with bombs for the scum, that I think there will be something that shows up that is just going to blow people's minds. I just don't think, like Andrew said, it's going to be right away. It's going to take one of these, you know, like the guy who made up the Peritani or Sable or, you know, what is it called? The guy that did the whole Zuckus Dengaroo thing. It'll take one of these folks to come up with something that will just have people crying for another FAQ change.
Ron, can you read the Cad Bane crew card?
Cad Bane, he's 2 points, scum only. Your upgrade bar gains the bomb icon. Once per round, when an enemy ship rolls attack dice due to a friendly ship bomb detonating, you may choose any number of focus and blank results. It must re-roll those results. Cool. I think this guy's awesome. I think this is what Scum needed to make bombs a thing. Like, this is the, in my opinion, Cad Bane is the Sabine of Scum.
So let's keep going down the list here. We got cruise missiles. This was spoiled in one of those Amazon shipping things early videos. Somebody made a video of it, and we got this revealed. Marcel, our ordnance master here, read for me cruise missiles.
Cruise missiles, range 2 to 3. It's a very uninspiring one attack. However, you may discard this card to perform this attack. You may roll additional attack dice equal to the speed of the maneuver you performed this round to a maximum of 4 additional dice. So basically what it means is you have a 3-point missile that can roll anywhere from as little as 2 attack dice, to 5 attack dice if you do a 4-speed maneuver. So if you need a missile and you've got fast ships like the A-wing, like the Z-95, the Skurg has a 4 forward that's white. So there's plenty of ships that have 4-speed maneuvers and a missile slot. So it can be pretty good. It can be pretty good, but at the same time, in my opinion, I'm not sold on it. I think if you're pressed for points, shave them somewhere else and bump up to concussion or cluster or something else. I'm actually not very excited about this at all, because
I 100% agree with you.
The what makes the best X-Wing players good is that you don't know what they're gonna do. They don't follow a script. They may have a script in their head of what they're gonna do each match, but you don't know it. And in my opinion, when you're playing something like a cruise missile, you know that you know what speed your opponent has to do in order to make it worth their while to spend those 3 points on a missile. So you know they're going to be doing either a speed 3 or a speed 4, and it makes you predictable. I would put this along the lines as an X7 title, but the difference being that the X7 allowed you to be predictable, and it still didn't matter because you could bump them. It didn't matter how, if you predicted their move, because they still got the benefit until the FAQ. This is not going to do the same thing. If you notice, the majority of the best X-Wing players don't fly the X-7 anymore because it makes them predictable. And if you predict where they're going, it stops the benefit. You've seen a lot more people going to the TIE-D, as you were talking about earlier, because that allows you to still get a benefit without becoming predictable. So that's why I think I'm not too hot on this. I think a lot of people are going to like it. Me, personally, I'm not going to fly it because I don't want you to know what I'm going to do.
I'm going to agree and disagree all at the same time here.
Sure.
So while I think that it has all the issues that you guys talk about. I actually do think there is a case for the A-Wing, only because it has the A-Wing test pilot, EPT. You take a green with a cruise missile, snapshot, and Deadeye, and then and guidance chips. And
so no auto thrusters on an A-Wing?
No auto thrusters on an A-Wing. But if you just have one of these guys to fill out a list, it is not safe to be in range 1, 2, or 3, no matter what.
Yeah, but the snapshot really works well when you got juke or when you have
fire control system something else.
Or something to push that damage through. A 2-die attack without modifiers is not scary. What makes them scary is that juke. What makes them scary is a crack shot.
I think the other thing to consider with A-Wings as well is, like, if you're taking a missile, you're not taking the shard and refit, so it's becoming even more expensive to run this.
Exactly.
Yep.
That is a good point.
So,
all right. Again, I just think that I wouldn't be surprised if you see someone who really likes A-Wings take four of these and shove them down your throat, and then you finish the game going like, shit, I'm dead because I had four cruise missiles come at my face.
Listen, nothing would make me happier than to watch Jeremy annihilate somebody with four of these and missiles and League Night, and he'll probably will try it. I think that most of us don't think it's very competitive. I think there's better things to spend your points on. It's just my opinion.
And one other thing that this missile has does have going for it is that while it does say you have to discard the card, you get to keep the target lock or the focus if you use Deadeye to modify the missile. So potentially, if you want to, you could forego, it's a little risky, you could forego guidance chips and throw in auto thrusters.
The other thing to keep in mind with this kind of ship, you have to go speed 4. So what's going to happen most likely when you fire this thing off, you're not going to be firing it at range 3. You're going to be firing it off at range 1 or range 2.
Fire it at range 1.
You can't even fire it at range 1. That's another drawback. So you're probably going to be firing this thing at range 2. So they're going to get... you're not going to benefit from them not getting the bonus defense die.
It seems like it would probably be more likely that you would get this off when you're doing a 3-speed maneuver, because you're going to have to judge that distance of range 2 to 3 a little bit in your engagement. So I think you'd be more likely to get that 3-speed off versus a 4-speed, because the only thing both of these ships can do is a 4-straight. I mean, I would see more of an argument for a Z95 having something like this, just because if you happen to have the 3 extra points, granted, it might be better suited somewhere else in your list, but, you know, we've kind of said in our group, Z95s are kind of the silent killer, because anytime they're in a list, everybody just ignores them because they're only rolling 2 dice and not really doing anything. So that's always the target that's saved for last, because people just don't think it's going to really deal that much damage. And it's usually that Z95 that just ends up plinking you for 2 every turn because you're ignoring it. And that's just the way of the world. So maybe if you throw something else on it, maybe it's somewhat successful because it's only a one and done thing because you are discarding the card. So I don't know that someone's going to prioritize a Z95 just because you have this on there. So maybe that has a little bit more of a niche than an A-Wing. I don't know. I have to mess with it.
The one thing I do like about this on a Z95, like what you're saying, is how many of us have played a game where we have that Z95 in our list as a blocker, and at some point that Z95 has to take that K-turn, and when they take that K-turn, they don't have the speed to get back into the game usually. They're doing like a 1-forward, a 2-forward, or that 2-bank to... Oh, it's not even a 1-forward, is it? What are the greens on a...
I think it's 1-forward, 2-forward, 2-banks, I think.
Yeah, okay, that's what it is. And it would be, this would not be so bad if when you take that K turn and
if you had the target lock from before.
If you had the target lock from before, you could, you know, just go. But again, but then you have to take the green to remove the stress. So I don't know.
So let's leave it at this.
Maybe maybe if you had cool hand or something.
Yeah, let's say it's 3-on-1. Three people think it's not. One person thinks it is. So Dion is going to go and build a list to prove all the haters wrong.
That means he has to stop flying his freaking Jumpmaster.
No, that means he's got to figure out a way to get a missile into one.
Fair enough. Challenge accepted.
I know this is a torpedo, but it's actually a missile. It's fine. This is fine. Yeah, I don't know. I think, okay, how about this? Let's make this fair. I think in a casual setting where people maybe aren't as
cutthroat.
As cutthroat, or you can call it cutthroat, but like let's say like on a cruise missile can become predictable at the highest level when people are really good at controlling range, being able to go from out of range to range one, blocking all of that. In those scenarios, I do agree that a cruise missile could be a liability. I think in a casual setting, this could wreck some face. Here, Marcel, pick one off the list.
So, and this is actually one that I'm super excited about. I think the first time I really heard about it was Ron talking about it. And I was like half asleep the way I am about 90% of the time. And then all of a sudden I was like 100% awake. I was already starting inventing like a million different list possibilities with this. So it's intensity. It's a 2-point elite pilot talent, double-sided for small ship only. It says, side A, after you perform a boost or barrel roll action, you may assign one focus or evade token to your ship. If you do, flip this card. Side B, at the end of the combat phase, you may spend a focus token or evade token to flip this card. So basically, I mean, this is probably the card, in my opinion, that this is the type of card that can break the game. I don't know exactly how, but it can. It's just, it is not only a free action, which is awesome, it's just, there's ways to bypass it. Namely, for example, let's see, what do we do? So we can do pattern analyzer. You move a red maneuver, and then you get two actions for one stress. Better yet, you get primed, what is it, the primed what?
Prime thrusters.
Yeah, prime thrusters. You put that on something like quick draw, and basically you can be stressed all day long, and prime thrusters lets you barrel roll all day long, and this gives you a focus or evade all day long. And those are just two things that pop out top of mind just really quick. Same thing with, there's got to be something with Poe on this.
Well, yeah, because Poe doesn't have to spend his focus to use his ability. No. So you can spend the focus to flip the card over.
Exactly. And on top of that, or if he does have to take a focus that turn, I mean, there's just so many different ways of and also the one that Ron was excited about, which I'll let him talk about in more detail, but it's basically 3-action Vader. And Ron, you can take it from there, because that's going to be your new baby.
Oh, man. Yeah, when I saw this card, I got super excited and got in our group chat and sent pictures of both halves of the card to Dion and Marcel and Alex, because I've been flying Vader, and this is a card for Vader. I think this card's just really great, and the reason why is Vader has 2 actions all the time. Like, that's what he does. You give Vader intensity, Now, on those key turns when you wish you had that third action, so you can boost barrel in position and still get that focus or evade for defense, now you can do that. And on the next turn, if you still need your two actions, you just don't flip the card over. You just use normal Vader and take your two actions. But then, when you're in that turn and you don't need your two actions, and we've all been there where you get your position and you already got the target lock on with Vader and you don't need to boost a barrel, well then, you could just use one of your actions to flip this card over and you're back to three action Vader again when you need it. So I think this card's super awesome. I 100% agree with Marcel that I think this card is screaming to be something that's going to be tier one play. Like I said, Poe Dameron, he works beautiful with this card. Vader works beautiful with this card. I've got at least a dozen things that I've kind of tinkered through about using intensity.
Jumpmasters.
I'm buying multiple TIE Aggressors just to get this card.
Hey, Skurgs. That's it. Skurgs.
Scourge. Yep.
Scourge. Scourge or Skurg?
It's Skurg.
It's yep. Skurg. I don't know.
yeah.
We have an issue with pronouncing names on this podcast, so it doesn't really matter.
It's fine. Yes. Cade Bane, Cad Bane, Yone, Dion, Andrea, whatever. It's fine.
Just Ron is the only exempt one.
Yeah. Roan. You know, Intensity, I think, is going to be a good card for sure. I worry for the casual list builder who tries Intensity on a ship that, for lack of a better phrase, shouldn't use Intensity and thinks, oh, this card sucks. So, for instance, if you put it... You put it on, I don't know, some... Luke Skywalker. Okay? You put it on Luke Skywalker or Wedge or something like that, and you end up using all those tokens that turn, and if that ship is engaged in combat and it's constantly having to spend its one action and never be able to flip it over again, it becomes a one-off EPT that you pay 2 points for. In the battle, like, I know for me, if I see somebody with Intensity, you're going to get it. I'm going to let you have it one turn, and then I'm going to pound that ship till it dies and make sure you don't get to
flip it back.
Get to flip it back. Because if you leave that ship alone that has Intensity, you're going to be in a bad spot. But at the same time, a good player, like a good opponent, will make sure that that ship will have a way to be disengaged, even if they need to flip it over again. Or if you're going against Vader or Poe, they're going to be able to flip it over. Oh, not quite at will, but they'll be the two best pilots, I think, to use with Intensity.
But
I like that there is. I mean, you're right, Dion, that it'll be easier for certain ships to flip this over than others. But I like that it's going to require some skill on both the player who's playing it to be able to actively be aware of flipping it up or flipping or having it flip down, that you're going to actually have to pay attention. You're not just going to auto get the ability consistently. Yeah. But then, like you said, on the opponent's side, figuring out a way to beat it, because it's definitely beatable.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Marcel.
Yeah, no, I was just saying that, you know, I'm trying to think about, you know, the point that you made, that this is the type of card that somebody will put on a list thinking it's great, and it's a casual player, and it will be useless, and then they'll hate this card. But you can say the same thing about something like Lone Wolf. Somebody who doesn't know how to manage range will put Lone Wolf on a list and think Lone Wolf is the worst DPT ever, where there are other people who know how to manage range and will use Lone Wolf. I will get, you know, 10 points of value out of that Lone Wolf. So, it is true that this card screams you need to know what you're doing to use it. But again, that's why I think this is the type of card that people at the elite level will figure out a way to do something, and it will end up in some of those top tier lists. I'm just excited about this one.
This is the kind of card that I want to see made from FFG in the future. Like, I want to see more of these types of cards. I don't have a problem with inherently powerful cards, as long as those cards require the skills of playing the game. Like, this card is going to require you some skill to use, and those are the types of cards I want to see. I don't want to see cards that just, like, as long as you equip these cards, you get to do this thing, and it's just super awesome. These are the types of powerful cards I want to see. Like, something that my opponent can interact with to make me have to play at a high level to use this card effectively. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Sure. Mm-hmm. Alrighty, so the next one I want to look at here, I think is a trap, guys. Sync Turret. 3 attack. It's a turret weapon. Range 1 to 2 only. It says attack. Target lock. So you have to have a target lock or have Deadeye. It says attack one ship, even outside your firing arc. If the defender is inside your firing arc, you may reroll a number of attack dice up to your primary weapon value. While it sounds like, oh, that's awesome, I can, like, reroll. How many points? It is 4 points, I believe.
Okay.
Double check that. Yes, 4 points. I think it's just bad. If you're taking a turret, you need to be taking Twin Laser Turret. The value is just off the charts. And Auto Blaster Turret. It's like one of those two. Nothing really in between, in my opinion. Because the reason is the range 3 bubble. Let's just talk about that. The range 3 bubble that's missing on this turret is huge. Okay? You're doing three attack dice. With all the auto thruster ship out there, range 1 to 2, I don't feel that Sync Turret is going to be able to... you're not going to get the damage output out of it that you would out of a TLT. And I think
100%.
I think in a world where TLT doesn't exist, Sync Turret is okay. It's a good turret. But because we have Twin Laser Turret, I just think it's a... meh, personally.
Yeah, and also, I mean, the beauty of a turret is you're able to attack ships that are not in your firing arc. It makes it easier to pilot because you don't have to be facing your target. But this ability only triggers when you're facing your opponent. So it's kind of like I always want to say BLT, like the sandwich, but I think it's BTL. Yeah, the Y-Wing upgrade. You know, it loses a lot of its potency when you're required to... because the ships that can equip turrets are usually... I mean, aside from the big base ships, the small base ships that can equip turrets are usually not super maneuverable.
Yeah, absolutely.
So... not being able to use the perks of this ability consistently, I think, is a big opportunity cost there. I think you would just probably find room for TLT for the consistent damage output.
Yeah, I completely agree with everyone. Is there a ship that has a turret plus a... astromech plus a crew? Because that's really the only way I see this being effective.
I mean, the Y-Wings have everything but the crew.
And the K-Wing doesn't have the astromech.
Yeah, the reason I'm saying is because I can
see... I'm not sorry, the K-Wing, I apologize. The Hawk.
Yeah, because the only way I can see this happening and being useful at all is with K-4 security droid and which gives you the free target locks. Mm-hmm. This and you know, something like Unhinged, where it makes where you get a crazy number of green maneuvers, and you're basically getting either a turret plus your focus, or a front shot target lock focus every turn. That's the only possible way that I see.
Well, I guess really being you could use this on a basic K-wing. It does have the crew.
Yeah, but it doesn't get K4.
Huh?
But it doesn't get the K4 security droid that gives you the free locks.
Yeah, it's regular astromech droid, crew member, and turret.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I don't know.
I think this is going to be a dud.
The problem is, with turrets in general, any turret you make, if it's not better than twin turbo lasers... Like
laser turrets.
Yeah, it don't matter. That card is so efficient. It's so good. You're always going to be building your list around that card if you want to play that card.
Yeah.
So until they change that card, every turret you make is just going in your box of I'm not playing this card because TLT exists. So
I'm going to disagree in one little thing. In my... At the competitive level, there are only two turrets that I believe.
Yeah, auto blaster turret.
Correct. So it's auto blaster.
Yeah, no, that one matters too, because auto blaster turret's unblockable damage.
Yeah, so you get auto blaster and you get twin laser, and everything else is for store champs.
Funsies.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I like the idea behind this. Like, I like the idea of a turret that makes you still want to fly well so you could get the benefit of rerolling dice out of your primary firing arc. The only build I see with this at all is like what Andrea was saying with the Y-Wing title, where you can fire twice out of the front arc and then reroll both times. But you're not going to have focuses on both attacks, so... Why wouldn't you just pay 2 points to get a TLT, fire twice anyways, and not have to worry?
There you go. Sync turret. Garbage.
I wouldn't say garbage, but I mean, let's put it up there with like better than blaster turret.
Barely.
I'll go out there. I'll say garbage.
Alrighty. And then the last upgrade here we're going to talk about. That's new. Unguided rockets. It is a double missile slot. It is 2 points, 3 attack dice, range 1 to 3. It says attack focus. You have to have a focus to perform this attack. It says attack one ship. It has to be in your firing arc. It says your attack dice can be modified only by spending a focus token for its standard effect. I'm just going to throw this out there. While I can see the utility on something like a TIE Punisher, that's probably the thing it fits on the easiest, and the TIE Aggressor, I just think it's bad. While it has some like possible statistical upside at like range 2, because range 3, you got all these ships with auto thrusters and stuff like that. At range 1, you might as well just shoot your primary, because there's no one die attack ship that can take this. It's a 2 die attack ship, and you get it range 1. You can use a target lock if you need to. And just versus most ships that are competitive, unguided rockets are bad.
See? Oh, God, Dion. You and Dion. I'm gonna get it right. All right, Dion. I don't think we've ever disagreed this much. I am
really
on the other end of the spectrum on this one as well.
What? All right, history will show I'm right, but continue.
Yeah, go ahead. We've got a three... basically, you've got, for the ships that can take it, I'm thinking of the bomber, personally.
You can't put it on a bomber.
They have 2 missile slots, don't they?
No.
What? Let me see. What bombs can take it? I mean, what ships can take it?
A Punisher and an Aggressor. I'm pretty sure that's it.
Let me check the bomber. You might be right, but if that's the case, then I retract my statement. Nope, the bomber. Bombers have 2 double torpedoes.
Missile, two double torpedo, right?
Yep. So the bomber can take it.
Okay, so, I still think it's trash. Continue.
You can take you put this on a bomber, and a regular bomber is 16 points. This will get it up to 18, and you get lightweight frame. So now you got a 3 agility ship with 6 points. A 3 agility ship with 6 hull, shooting 3 dice at range 1, 2, and 3. So basically that turns that 20-point ship into the Inquisitor, because at range 3 you still get auto thrusters on the few ships that you'll see, not few, on the ships that you'll get with auto thrusters, but you don't get the extra green die because it's a secondary weapon. So you get they don't get the extra die at range 3. And you got a ship at 20 points that rolls 3 dice at range 1, 2, and 3, 6 hull, 3 agility. That's good. And you put this on, I just think it's really good on a bomber. So anyway, that's just my opinion.
My issue with the biggest issue with it is that you are turning off half of the possibilities of your rerolls. Like, you can only spend focus. That's it. You will never be able to reroll dice.
But in certain ships, I'm not saying in all of the ships, but in certain ships, in X-Wings, in T-70s that do not include Jess, in the K-Fighters, in any of those, you're not rerolling anyway. You're just moving and you're focusing and you're shooting and using a focus. That's what you're doing. So
right. I get that. But the thing is that the money shot in X-Wing is having target lock focus. Like, the majority of competitive ships, the reason why they're so good is that you can double modify the dice. And I just think on the curve of where we are for X-Wing, I just don't think Unguided Rockets is on the curve. It's not on the power curve, I believe.
You're starting to convince me, but I'll see. But
okay.
I do see your point. I do see your point about basically the damage curve. I won't retract my statement 100%, but I do see your point. We'll see.
Yeah, because this card came out. Go ahead, Brian.
I'm sorry. I think I would like this card a little more if it didn't say attack focus. Like, I wish this said attack target lock. Like, you just have to have the ship target lock to perform this attack. But then your attack can only be modified by the focus token. I think that would have been better for this ship, for this card. Because you can't even get use out of putting, like, my initial thought when I saw this was like, oh, I can put long-range scanners on the TIE bomber since guided ship is worthless because I wouldn't be able to modify the die with guided ship. I'm like, oh, well, I just put long-range scanners on my bombers, put this missile on it, put some extra munitions on it, and then I lock you right at the beginning of the game, and I fly around and only take focus and barrel roll actions, and I modify my dice with my focus. But the fact that I have to, like, take the focus to be able to attack means I can't barrel roll when I want to attack, and I don't know.
I see what you mean. Like, if
you see what I mean, like
if you did the whole Omega Leader thing or the TIE Advanced thing where the target lock is just an auto stay there, you're not using it to attack, but you're just using it to enable the
weapon to go off. Especially because the problem I have with long range scanners is that like once you get into the scrum of the game, you can't reacquire target lock very often unless you run away and disengage. And this would have been a way to, like, use long-range scanners and not use guidance chips. But I still don't know if it's, I don't think it's good enough, simply for the fact that you can't, I don't know, you can't, what, so what slot do you run on, do you just do nothing in the modification slot then? As long as scanners is a bus, lightweight frame, okay. Yeah, that's fine, yeah, I guess.
Frame is the only one.
And yeah, lightweight frame's a fan, but the ship that you're putting it on still kind of sucks.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Got a crappy dial.
I mean, I'm seeing the light, Dion.
Good.
if we're gonna do this, I think the aggressor with TLTs is just better.
All right, and I think the only saving grace of this card, if it has anything, is that it is unlimited of this. Like, you don't have to toss the card; you just do it. So it makes a Punisher. Punishers are still bad guys, but you can now have a 3-attack dice Punisher when you want to play it.
Okay. Oh wait, you don't have to spend the card to shoot to use this.
No.
Oh, well, that's a little bit better. A little bit better. Still kind of stinks.
Yeah. All right, guys, so we're going to close out the show. I know it seems like, whoa, what happened to, what have you done with those plans? Well, there's no new events that have popped up. We have store championships currently. North American championships are happening at Gen Con, August 17th to the 20th, and nationals are happening at Nova. Registration for both of those are closed, so those are just kind of wait and see what the results are for that. You can catch our live stream of all of these store championships and the North American Championship. We're going to be streaming the second day of that on our Twitch channel. That's twitch.tv/GoldSquadronPodcast. You can watch our X-Wing tutorial videos and replays of our streams on our YouTube channel. Just look us up, Gold Squadron Podcast. And lastly, if you enjoy the show and you want to help us continue expanding our content while getting awesome swag, go to patreon.com/goldsquadron. We have swag for $1 up to $5, whatever you feel like giving. We love and appreciate it, and we'll get you awesome stuff. For Ron, Andrea, and Marcel, this is Dion Morales. Gold Squadron out.